All right, this is the new Glarus Brewing Podcast with Dan Carey. I am Scott May. Dan Carey is off doing really busy Dan Carey stuff, as I'm sure he is wont to do most days, but we have a suitable replacement, I think. Deb is here today. How are you doing, Deb?
I'm doing well. I was going to say, I'm not Dan, I'm Deb.
That is well, it's the name of the podcast.
Yeah, right.
And we're here with Emily, and I'm Emily Holtz, right?
Bunting. No.
What's
no.
that? Bunting now. No. Yes, I always get it mixed up in my head.
I've had three last names, so... You can take my pick of them.
Well, it's always so funny because it causes me such anxiety because I'm like, I'm going to say their first and last name. And then right before I say it, I'm like, you're going to get it wrong.
I have a little bit of a panic in that area myself. But no, this is Emily Bunting. She's been with us since she was a toddler.
Well, yeah. And when I talked to Emily last time, it was a great conversation because I really do enjoy talking to team members who have been here just like for a very long time, and especially Emily. And I think you and Emily kind of have, you guys have both sort of grown with this brewery, right?
Like, yeah.
Cause you both started here. You started here when it was just a warehouse, but Emily came on when, you know, it was just Riverside and, you know, I think Spotted Cow had been out for maybe a year, maybe not even yet quite.
I think it'd been out a couple years.
A couple years?
Yeah. I started in 99.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I've been about 3 years on. Yeah.
But I would say we have grown with the brewery. Yeah. You know, that's the thing about something being around 30 years where Emily's not a toddler anymore. And I'm not a young woman anymore.
Well, it is really cool hearing stories of people who are like, oh, yeah, you know, when I started, it was just, you know, answering phones or filing this. And then when you have Emily, it's like, what are you doing now? It's like, well, I'm in charge of all of the employee benefits and the ESOP and like all of this major stuff. And I just think it's really cool that that's something that you seem to have put a premium on is taking the people you have, and it's become sort of a running theme when I talk to various team members, is they all tell me sort of the same thing. Like Deb has this ability to just sort of x-ray you while she's like watching you do your work, and she will tell you what you're good at that you don't even kind of know yet.
Oh, funny. Well, I do try really, this is the thing about running a business is it, for one, it's really hard and it's very stressful because everybody comes with their own unique set of talents and challenges. And probably going to get letters about this next comment. I don't mean to be disparaging, but I sort of feel like trying to plant people where they're going to grow and bloom.
Yeah.
And so sometimes people get moved around a couple different places, but generally once somebody starts, you start to see they have a real interest in something you hadn't anticipated. Like there was a guy on our packaging line, and then I'm talking to him in the lunchroom, and he, we have a lot of hunters here, but he was talking about repairing guns and building guns. And I was like, oh, this guy is like a detail person because that is like a minutia.
Yeah. You really need something to work. It's
right. And yeah. So then when we had a new bottle inspecting equipment, which was really expensive, I said, you should hit up this person because I think he might be really good at this. And it turns out he's like savant, is great at it. And that is the same with Emily. When Emily started, she was just came as a very young woman to work in our gift shop, but it was clear that she was really good at numbers. And I mean, she is very pleasant with people, but she has a real thing for numbers. And when she went away to college, which we were all like bereft and terrified she wasn't going to come back to New Glarus, she had worked for a company where they were doing overland transport trucking. And so she then had learned all of these things from college and then her job. And so then it was really easy to move her up into the brewery. And as the brewery has grown, she has a team now of people that assist her with accounting things. And of course we have an outside accounting firm, but she just really has, she puts herself into it to find big projects that, you know, move the brewery forward in important ways. I mean, particularly with employee ownership.
Well, yeah. And Emily, I was going to want to touch on employee ownership sort of towards the top of this conversation, because, you know, in talking with Deb and in talking with Dan, you know, when they first started, you get the sense of like, you know, everyone was sort of struggling to keep up. Everyone was sort of struggling to keep it afloat. And in the back of their minds, though, was always this idea of like, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we could provide a certain quality of life for team members and people who come to work for us? Like, yeah, gee, that would be nice. And then, you know, unlike a lot of people who end up going into business, when the time came to do that, they sort of followed through. They did it. They never lost that connection they had to the struggle, right? So doing things like employee stock ownership later on or fully benefited healthcare actually came to fruition, but it never was a set it and forget it thing. You guys seem to constantly evolve on this stuff. So do you want to speak a little bit to how employee ownership, you know, came about a few years ago, like how that conversation started between like you and Deb and Dan or how that idea even got brought up?
It's definitely Deb's idea. She was looking for ways to continue to take care of the employees.
Yeah.
Because that's always been her number one goal, is to make sure everybody has a very nice lifestyle and everyone is taken care of. And so she, you know, it was 100% her idea to come, and she was looking at things and she came across this idea and she ran with it. And it's, I had never heard of it before when she brought it up. I was like, what is this? And once you start delving into it, it is a really great thing. And it is a way to make sure that employees are not just taken care of while they're getting a paycheck, but it's also to make sure, you know, once you retire, you're still being taken care of, in a way. And it's also a way to show that your hard work is greatly appreciated and more than just a paycheck.
Yeah.
That everything we do here has, you know, affects this ESOP. And that the decisions we make, you know, affect it and affect, you know, how much it grows, how much the value is. And it's nice to know that it's not like a big corporation, some person in a black suit's making all the decisions. You know that you're more likely to make good decisions because you know it's benefiting everybody.
Yeah.
It's a definite of you're willing to put in more than 100% because you know there's this payback, not just for yourself, but for everyone there. And not just for right now, but for future generations too. So that, you know, I'm going to be passing on this legacy of, you know, yes, I benefit from the ESOP, but everyone who's going to come behind me is also going to be able to benefit from this as well.
And yeah. And Deb, when you were sort of generating this and starting to mull it over in your head, what were sort of the, you know, the issues you were looking to tackle with it?
Yeah, it's actually it came, you know, we have investors that were the original investors in the brewery and they still own a lot of stock. And so they're always bringing up topics that they feel like need to be attended to. Mm-hmm. And so one of them was particularly persistent in, what is your succession planning? And at the time I was like, dude, I'm like 50. What yeah. is your problem? You know, like I'm in decent health.
Do you
know
something? I plan to work.
Yeah, I'm working. What do you mean? But I realized as I started to delve into it that it is succession planning is just this huge. I had no idea. Like Bill, I knew it was going to be really hard to get a business going. I'm, you know, well versed in the difficulties of keeping it running. But I didn't know that succession planning would be just as equally a difficult and complex problem to handle. And really, it boils down to there aren't that many choices. When you're smaller, there are more choices because the expense isn't as great. So people can, you know, buy a restaurant or a hotel. But when you get to this size, the number of people that are willing to make an investment to purchase a brewery that is, you know, maxed out on capacity and limited options for production and all of that, you know, it's not such a wide range of interest.
Yeah, there's like three or four names you could probably think of.
Right, and I had talked to some of them, and they're very clear, you know, that they, and you know, we can all look at what they have done with other breweries that they buy, and they lay people off, and they cut all the sales budgets and they start moving products around from their other breweries to there. And, you know, like, it's not a bad way to continue, but it's not optimum. Mm-hmm. Then there's the vulture capitalists. They're always out there saying, we'd like a place to park our money if you would only continue to work while we stay in charge of everything else. Who needs Emily? Let's just do it ourselves. But you keep working. So yeah. That's kind of that's not very nice.
Yeah, sort of like gut it and keep you on. It's like, well, there'll be a nice figurehead. And
right. Yeah, for a couple of years.
For a couple of years.
While you lay people off. So that didn't seem very inspiring. And really, it came from one of my White House Champions of Change meetings when Obama was there, because I was at this roundtable discussion of people from all diverse backgrounds. There was maybe 15 or 20 of us, but one of them was the woman who had started Dansko, and she was talking about employee ownership and what a great way it was for her business. Mm-hmm. And if anybody wanted to talk to her about it, feel free. And I thought, oh yeah, I had heard of this. And I mean, in my heart, this feels like a good choice, but how do you make it happen? And so then I started to investigate it, and I thought this totally fits with my challenge. I'm always trying to keep a very flat management, you know, without titles and groups of people that attack issues or have control over big decisions. Things are done in a group setting, not just by one individual. And it's so, on one hand, messy. And on the other hand, it feeds my creativity. And I think it feeds the brewery team, because who wants to be a mushroom? Like, we've all had the job where it's like, hey, you aren't paid to think. Just get over there and haul that box.
Clock in and move the liquid. Yeah. That's all I need.
Just shut up.
Yeah.
And I don't like being treated that way, and I didn't want to treat others that way. And so the flat management came together, and ESOP fits well with that. And I'm really thankful that we have a team of people that have stepped into, you know, taking on big projects like the employee handbook, and Emily in particular heading up issues with healthcare. And I just think it fits well all the way around. We'll see where it goes. It's a kind of a big social experiment, but I'm feeling really good about it. And as far as investors, and everybody should know that it has a great track record of longevity, much better than generational inheritance of businesses, or certainly beyond the private equity, which is the real name for vulture capitalists.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and when you think about it, and you know, when you're looking at, you know, how do those stories generally play out with generational stuff? It's like, what's the old joke? It's like, oh yeah, by the third generation, it's like the people are so divorced from the start and so divorced from the work of it that it just becomes, you know, they weren't steeped in it. They don't really know what keeps it going that way. So you can see why things would start to sort of fizzle out. And then eventually it just, you know, someone four generations later sells it for whatever. And and it's not the same. It never had the opportunity to be what it was continued on.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm listening to you like lay those out. I was just thinking, you know, having known you for a little bit, like, yeah, none of those other options really seem like your style. Like, it doesn't seem like something you would just like hear someone say and go, that makes me feel good. It makes me feel like a right decision, you know?
Well, I guess it depends on what your motivators are. But I think for us collectively, like Emily's saying, our motivator is taking care of each other. I mean, at the end of the day, money is a tool. It's not a goal. Yeah. And I don't see the value in accumulating big piles of cash. I see value in taking care of each other. And in this case, there's a lot of people that need to be taken care of. Not only do we have the investors, which includes the employee owners, you know, all of the brewery team members, but there's a community responsibility. You know, we try to do things like close early so that people go into town to drink beer, and give the little coins for free beer if you come and buy a beer at the brewery, to kind of prompt people to go that way, to take care of all of our retailers across the state, and come up with interesting beers and a price point that is still, you know, relatively affordable. We try to keep it that way. And I mean, it is a lot, you know, buying all of our raw ingredients from Wisconsin. I mean, packaging barley, hops, I shouldn't say all, because of course we get a lot of hops and barley and things from other countries, but packaging materials in particular, bottles, cans, boxes, labels, all that comes from Wisconsin. These are things that create jobs. And so I think it makes us a richer community and a nicer place to work, and which means people smile at me when I come in, and I like that. So it's all very selfish in the end.
Well, you know, that's a good enough reason to do anything. So yeah, people, right. People will smile at you and say, hey, I like what you did.
Yeah, right.
As far as administrating ESOP and things like that, I know you have sort of, you know, like a gang of three or four others that help with that from team members. It's sort of, you know, they can volunteer to be on the ESOP board. Functionally, now that it's sort of a few years on, how is it playing out in sort of the conversations you guys are having as far as, you know, what you want benefits to be, what you want time off to be? Like, does this stuff all now start getting discussed amongst the ESOP communications team, or how does that work?
So it's not the ESOP.
Okay.
But we did develop, we call it the communications team. And this is definitely a Deb's prompting to make sure that everyone knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's been a very, I don't remember the exact number of how many are on there, but I want to say it's probably 17 of us, mm-hmm. From all throughout the brewery, different roles, different shifts, all that kind of thing. And it's been a very interesting journey. It's been, you know, we haven't been doing it that long. And like anything, you know, you feel, it's kind of like a first date. You feel really awkward on the first couple of dates because you're trying to figure everything out.
Yeah.
But I feel like we've really kind of synced up now. And yeah, we're talking about things, you know, like pay and benefits and the handbook and all these
employee things. Review process was your last big project.
Yeah. And it's been very interesting because, you know, this is, you know, viewpoint wise is a very diverse group, and I really like hearing other people's point of views, mm-hmm. and their thoughts on things. Cause it's, and then going and everybody going out and getting everybody else's thoughts and then kind of bringing it back, because there's been many things I've been like, oh, you know what? I never would have thought of it like that. And that's a really great idea. And so I really love how everybody has a different view on things, and we come together and we agree on things, you know, yeah. We can come up with stuff, and word it and have it in different ways that everybody can kind of agree on and everybody can get on board with.
And what I really enjoy about hearing as these stories come up and as these, you know, these programs and groups get talked about, whether I'm, you know, sitting here with Scott Knoll or someone from maintenance or, anyone I've talked to, when they start talking about this sort of stuff, you know, it always reminds me, or it always puts in my head, how sort of an individual business and the people who run it can sort of head off all sorts of labor headaches if they keep sort of what you guys seem to have kept in mind, which is your business. You may have started your business, you may have built your business, but at some point your business becomes bigger than you and you have to take care of those people around you. And it seems like a lot of people can stop headaches before they even happen by just sort of keeping that in mind. Cause it's like, you guys never seem to have like, no one's ever coming to work like, hey guys, we need to fight for this change. It seems like it's just sort of naturally and organic happening here. If what I'm driving at is making sense.
And that's a lot with Deb, and the flat management really has a lot to do with that. That everyone here can walk into anybody's office, mm-hmm. and have a conversation. That includes Dan and Deb hey, I have a concern, or I have a new idea, or I have whatever. That they can walk into anybody's office. And for people who are used to very corporate, mm-hmm. you know, the VP of the VP of the president of the whatever.
I'm the assistant to the regional manager.
Right. We have none of that. We're very flat. And we try to be open as much, you know, we try to do our best to make open and make sure everybody knows what's going on. And that, I think, really helps people connect and feel like
they know they count.
Yeah.
And a lot of this sort of started organically. Like, it would be great if I could sit here and say, Yeah, I am such a genius. I thought this out.
Well,
but it wasn't planned. You have the first initial thought of we're going to take care of the people around us. And then that sounds really super simple. But it's the same as a marketing plan. Like you have a single sentence that you're trying to focus on. And then out of that, the decisions become easier because really including everybody started on the production floor where there would be something's going on, like a piece of equipment is misfiring. People are going to like start throwing stuff because something's not working or you never know. Like there's a lot of moving parts in a brewery. And so
a lot of things that can make you angry very quick.
My God. And so Dan had started early on because it isn't a case of, oh, this person has been here longer or makes more money or has a fancier kind of background, so they are going to know the solution. Sometimes that is a case, but often it might come from somebody that has just started and maybe they noticed something or heard a sound or saw it done somewhere else, or they had heard something and they wonder out loud. And then somebody else takes that little nugget and is like, oh, you know what? We should try this. And so Dan started a long time ago, a process we call quality circles. And so if there is an issue in any area of the brewery and he calls a quality circle, anybody can join it. Like it doesn't matter how long you have been there or how big or small the circle is. People who are interested in solving this problem come together and they stand literally in a circle and kind of like bat ideas back and forth. What about this? What about this? Can we call this guy? I don't know. And sometimes problems get fixed right away, but sometimes those kinds of problems might be something that takes a long time or requires construction or new equipment. And so then that quality circle becomes like an actual group and they continue to meet until it is resolved. And so people, we really do appreciate what people bring to the table. That's the fun of them. And so, and everybody has different skill sets, which is also the fun of them.
Yeah.
Because God forbid you have a whole bunch of creative people like me with a little bit of attention deficit running the joint. That would be really awful. We need people.
It'd be terrible. Like
it would be bad.
I'm not saying, I'm talking about myself. Like if you're like, hey Scott, it's on you. I mean, no. Not all of it.
Yeah. I have dyslexia. I cannot add a long row of numbers, but other people love it.
Yeah.
And so you have to have everybody and have to have a way that everyone feels respected. And I feel pretty good about what we have here.
Yeah. And what I really enjoyed and what I sparked me, like, I want to get you two in a room together to talk about this is, and we were talking about a little bit before, you know, we started up, even if you come with an altruistic business goal of like, I want to take care of my people. I want to, you know, make sure everyone has a good quality of life. You know, sometimes that is your starting point and then you start becoming successful and there's, there's a motivation or an impulse in a lot of people to go, well, yeah, we could get the gold level, but they don't have anything right now. And bronze is pretty okay. You know what I mean? It starts to become like a game of mathematics of like, what can I do to make myself feel good about the goal I set while also not, doing it to the fullest extent I could?
Yeah.
And that does not seem like an issue here at all. And what prompted me this is we've always had great healthcare here. And I know you've spoken at some length about why that was important to you. And that always has resonated with me because, I'm the son of a public health nurse. My mom was working graveyard shifts in the ER. And you see what kind of, people are coming in for emergency services, even like during the day when it's just, oh, my kid has a sore throat for the last 6 days and I don't have to go to the emergency room. I don't have any insurance. Mm-hmm. So that's always sort of struck accord with me, but you guys didn't do like the set it and forget it thing either. It seems like, I don't know if this is a product of yearly meetings or how it goes, but it seems like you guys are always looking at ways to improve those benefits year over year, or you know, every few years to like, what's new out there? What can better be, how can we better serve our employees so they're not worried about their health? And recently, and I missed the meeting because I'm terrible at showing up to 2-hour long meetings. So I'm actually glad we're doing this, is I don't fully understand what my health savings account is going to be, but you guys have started a health savings account program, which seems like kind of star spangled awesome to me and almost anomalous within this business space. So, Deb, was this something you had come up with, or was this coming from Emily or a communication circle, or how did this come up?
No, it originally started, Emily takes care of the meetings. You know, this time of the year is about when we start to hear, here's what the increase in your premium will be.
Yeah.
And the last few years have not been so bad, although we spend a huge amount of money on healthcare, for everybody here, period. They've been reasonable, you know, kind of like cost of living, but this year was really awful. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know it. I don't know what I was doing that she didn't bother me with it. But Emily just took it upon herself to start investigating something that actually I had looked at some years ago, but we weren't big enough to do it then. And that's the health savings account. And so maybe I'll let you talk about it.
Yeah, it's one of those things. So every year, we, like Deb said, we get our renewal. You know, in some years are a little sticker shock, but you're like, okay, it's worth it. And so it was, you know, our vendor that we work with who, you know, does the hard work of going out and quoting everything, gave me a heads up. They're like, hey, you know, we're going to have this meeting. And I don't want you to sit there and be shocked when we go through this. And
it's got to be a good feeling when they call you in advance of the meeting.
Never a good sign.
No, it's never like, hey, just so you know, be warned. It's going to be great.
Well, they don't want to see you cry. Right.
Yeah. And so they, and then, you know, you know, it was, they went back and did their due diligence. They, you know, they went and argued our case and you know, they even brought the renewal down, you know, I think it was 2 or 3% down.
Oh, right on.
Which is so great, but it was such a high renewal. And it wasn't, and hearing other people too, for as high as ours was, there are people who were getting much worse than us. And then, you know, it's our commitment that for, as long as we can feasibly do it, we want to pay 100% of the health.
Yeah.
And so they went and looked at it and they said, okay, so here's your current plan. Here's how much it is. And we know it's going to be high. But, you know, you can do this other thing. And so we looked at the numbers and the numbers really made sense. Switching to a high deductible plan, because we used to just have copays. You know, you go to the doctor, you pay $20, you go see the doctor.
Yeah.
Or you go to get your prescription, you pay whatever copay. So high deductible, the high deductible plan is a little bit different. You have to kind of pay the money first.
Up front,
and then insurance will kick in.
Gotcha.
And so we, you know, dollars and cents, it made a lot of sense that we could have a high deductible plan, which is going to save us on monthly premiums. Mm-hmm. And then employees can open up an HSA account, health savings account. And then we could actually still put in that high deductible into that account for them.
Yeah.
And so they are actually still going to have zero out of pocket, and it's going to save us a lot of money.
See, yeah.
And a couple hundred thousand, really.
Yeah.
I mean, and so, when Emily's talking about the high deductible, which we're all understand what that is, and it's not all that joyous.
Yeah.
The difference with the health savings account is that an account is opened for each person that takes care of that deductible. So instead of the bill going to the, I mean, they still get it. The insurance company still gets it, but it gets paid out of your account. And if you don't use the account, one of the really great things is it moves forward with you, and it's accruing money because they're investing it in places. And if you worked here, you know, a while and you retired and you still had money there, you still would get to use it for healthcare because you're going to have a premium with your Medicare and Medicaid or whatever the things are that people get when they get the, I mean, who knows what it'll be called then. And so that money can still be used for that. And it all goes in pre-tax dollars, and it's earning interest and all of that. So it is really a benefit at the end of the day. The thing on our end is the initial seeding of putting money into everybody's account every year so that they don't have to pay out of pocket to get to that deductible. But I'm thinking it's going to work really great. We're excited.
And it just, to me, it goes to show the level of commitment to this thing and the level of difference in thinking that you guys have as a management team when it comes to managing employee benefits. Because I you know, I've been in many jobs, some of them ranging from, you know, you're on your own for healthcare to like, we're going to provide your healthcare, but now we're going to start, you know, as the years tick by, asking for nickels here, dimes there. And then next thing you know, it's $1.50. Yeah. And it all starts to add up. Now, when you hear this plan just on the face of it, you're like, okay, so you guys are going to be saving monies, and then, but the employees will be pulling from their paychecks, putting it into their accounts, and that'll pay their deductible. But it's like, no, that's not what we're doing.
No.
It's still going to be 100% employer funded.
Yep.
It's just now that the money's not going to pay an astronomical premium that they were quoting, but to seed health savings accounts that is the same number of that deductible you'd have to hit before your insurance kicks in.
Yep, exactly.
That's insanely cool.
Yeah, I think it's a really great concept. I don't know who in the insurance industry came up with this, and it has been around a long time because I met with people about it even back when we were at Riverside. But you have to have a big enough group in order to be able to make it function, and you have to be able to have enough cash that you can seed everybody's account. But at the end of the day, it gives us what we want, which is everybody has great health insurance. And the company saves some money too. So all the way around, win-win. And now Emily is turned into like savant on...
I'm learning.
It's very complicated, but she's doing a great job.
Yeah. And I have to say, that's one thing that really surprised me. Because I was a little anxious presenting this. Because whenever you have to present change to employees...
Yeah.
It's a lot of people.
Yeah. And it's a lot. How are they going to take this?
Oh yeah. And I'm like the most change adverse person in the world. Like if I can set something to autopilot and then just never think about it again, that's like,
And I have been so surprised and so thankful that everyone has like, and this goes to how much we all work together.
Yeah.
Everybody has been, I haven't gotten no negative feedback from this.
Nice.
Everybody's been like, this is going to be great. This is awesome. Thanks for doing this. And everybody has been, you know, doing everything. Cause you know, there's some setup things, things that need to, there's a lot of working wheels and everybody's been doing what they need to do to get it done and are happy about it.
Yeah.
And so that is really lifted. Like, cause you worry, you're like, this is not going to be well received or well received. And it has, and everybody has totally come together. You know, if I'm unavailable to help somebody set up that account, somebody who's already done it has, they're like, they'll step in and they'll do it. Cause that, you know, I've checked back in with people. Oh, you needed me to help. No. So-and-so helped me. And I'm like, oh, great. This is great. Everybody's learning together. And so it's been a really good, experience.
Well, yeah, I think we crashed their system.
We did. And that goes,
I think we kind of did.
We kind of did.
How we, traverse, the unexpected of, when I'm telling everybody, okay, we need this done by tomorrow. And everybody's, you know, a week ahead of time trying to get in and they can't get it done. And so
the insurance company had the problem, not us.
Yeah. Everyone here understood it. It was like, this sounds awesome. I am on it right now.
Exactly. And the website goes nuts.
And the website crashed.
And it's a holiday Monday, so they're not going to get it fixed till Tuesday. But everybody just was like, great. They waited for the emails to say, okay, go. And as soon as I said go, they went.
Yeah.
So. Well, and to me, you know, stories like that make me really happy because I like when there's a little organized chaos about, but also I think people, you know, especially working people who, you know, whose paycheck comes in, their benefits come in. These are things they count on, right? They can't just be like, if it doesn't happen for a few weeks, I'll go out of pocket and blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? It's just, when you count on it, you really need it to be there. And I count myself among that. And when you hear a plan and you can tell like someone's BSing me here, cause it seems like I'm going to be paying, you know what I mean? You're not going to be super quick to want to sign up for it. But the fact that everyone sort of heard what I heard and was like, wait a minute, this sounds like it's going to work out a lot better for, like almost like we had a benefit and then you know, you guys could have very easily been like, hey, you know, the premiums are going up. It's time to tighten belts. We're going to ask for an employee contribution, whatever.
That's always what I'm advised to do. That's what's really interesting.
Yeah.
When you meet with insurance professionals, I mean, even people that are involved in insurance in the government, they're like, you know, people are using it too much and you need to make them pay for it. So they're responsible. And I'm like, what planet are you on? I know no one who goes to the doctor because they're bored or because they're lonely.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what this abuse is you're talking about. I walk around the brewery generally going, you know, you need to go to the doctor. I don't care if you think you need to work tomorrow. Just take the time and go.
I've seen you with that limb for 3 days now. We're not going to start calling you Peg. So you need to go to the doctor.
Healthcare is important. And there's also a lot of young families here and sick kids. You know how this goes. They're like sick, good next week, sick the next week. And that can break a family budget very quickly. And anyway, I just am not buying into the rhetoric of that it's wasteful for people to take care of their health. There are a lot of things that I would change in the industry, and most notably, we need universal health care to lift the burden of these. You know, we're paying over $2,000 for every family that's here. This is like a huge burden, and you know, this beer industry, I'm selling against breweries that get their beer made in Belgium and in Germany and Japan and England, all countries that are not paying, you know, $1 million the top for healthcare.
It's a strategic economic advantage.
Yeah, it is. And so, you know, when you discuss what the cost of labor is in America, it's not so much that people are taking home more per hour. We have all these other things which could easily be addressed. But I will stop so that you don't get lots of letters and we'll go back.
Well, you know, and I think, you know, most people can agree that at the end of the day, you know, it takes a very callous person to look at someone who's sick and go, they shouldn't get help. You know what I mean? They can't afford it. They shouldn't be able to see a doctor. You know, it takes a very kind of callous mindset.
I think a lot of people do that. Yeah. I think people are very much like, oh, well, they smoke. So too bad. You know, oh, well, that person drank. Well, you know, they're too fat. I mean, like, well, they ate unhealthy anyway. Like, I do think people can be very callous and it really is cruel. There are not disposable people on the planet. And even if you're very old or you're not maybe the smartest person or you haven't made the best life choices or whatever, your genetics work against you, it is incredibly unfair for insurance companies to be able to scoop up the healthy working people and have them pay premiums and everybody else gets shuttled off onto social services. Yeah. And then we argue about how that's costing too much. I am digressing again. And so I will now stop myself.
Well, I think I kept the digression going.
I don't know.
But no, like, and Emily, to your credit, like you were presented with a you know, this problem and there was, you know, two solutions really is in one of them, like it's something you knew as a culture of this company that you just didn't want to do.
Right. And I always say there's the people who understand the value of insurance and the people who don't. Mm-hmm. And the people who don't have never had, and I'm thankful for this, have never had huge health issues.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful they don't. But as someone who has lived, you know, my first husband, you know, had cancer and, you know, and passed away, and knowing that I would have been stuck, if we didn't have very good insurance, I would have been stuck with, I mean, I would have had to declare bankruptcy. I mean,
yeah.
You're talking, he probably wrapped up and his whole treatment over $1 million.
Wow.
And I think I paid a total of $500 out of pocket. And so to have people who are in a very intense health situation, having to decide between making your mortgage and getting the person you love care, we don't want to put anybody in that position. And so that's what I look at when I look at these things is what kind of coverage, where are we getting it? And what kind of cost? And then you have to balance it with what can the company sustainably do? And so it's nice that we can do both. We can save the brewery some money and we can still offer really awesome health coverage.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Deb, when you started on this journey of providing, you know, these quality of life benefits, I think you started off on a really great foot that Emily was able to articulate, which is, it wasn't like, I want to get the Cadillac down the line. You know, it was, what is the feasible best we can do for the longest amount of time? You know what I mean? It seems like that has been your guys' guiding post in all of this stuff. Not like what is going to get everyone off our back and say, we're giving benefits, what do you want? But what is going to be useful for people that's going to allow us to still do business.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing about this, when you put it in a business perspective, that I like to point out is that for me, and you know, maybe this isn't true of other businesses, but I really need people to be working and I want them to show up and be articulate and rested. And, you know, not everybody's domestic home life is what, you know, nirvana. However, I would like them to be able to handle those things, but show up here, we call it, with your boots on, ready to go. Show up in the morning and you have a job to do and do it well, and not be too exhausted or too distracted to perform the job very well. And we are blessed with 120 something people that are that way. But that also requires a level of support from the employer. Mm-hmm. And that is the thing. Like, so there's a million things, like 12-hour turnaround rule. That was an early one, because when Dan had worked for a bigger brewery, they used to they'd let him go at, you know, midnight, but he had to be back to work at 8 a.m. Well, we lived 45 minutes away. The guy needs to come home. Maybe he'd like to, you know, eat something. He needs to sleep. He has to shower again and then get back to work. So really he's like 4 hours of sleeping.
Oh yeah.
Like, that isn't really very humane. So there are a lot of little, you know, that idea of taking care of your people, that's what I'm saying. It kind of takes care of a lot of other decision making, including the health care. So, I mean, and the retirement. Yes. So yeah. That's what the ESOP's about. That's what we had, a 401k, you know, previous to the ESOP. And I want people to retire and be able to own their home and go on vacation and send their kids to college. I'm really proud of that. When people buy homes, I feel, you know, vicariously some joy in, like, hey, I helped change this people's life and, you know, maybe more or less influence. But for me, I take vicarious joy in all those things. New babies, new houses, yeah. Fancy cars. I'm all for it. Vacations, like, do it.
I really enjoy that anecdote too, because anyone who's worked the service industry knows when you got plugged in for some shifts that they just needed to fill a hole in, because like someone could, you're like, really? Close to open and it's a double, really?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I'm gonna go home and slam two beers and go right to bed. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. And for years, Dan worked rotating shifts for almost 4 years. That was like a nightmare. 7 day weeks. Like, come on. Anyway.
Well, you know, I'm very, very excited that you guys are continuing to think about this stuff and continuing to make it a guiding principle moving forward. And I think, you know, whether it's the health savings account or the ESOP or the paid time off or team retreats and getaways in the late winter that we do, you know, all of it is greater than the sum of its parts, right? It comes together to form, you know, an ethos that I think we're kind of circling back to thinking about how the ESOP even started, when you have, you know, very interested people getting on your case about, so what happens after, right? You know, this is how you sustain what happens after, right? Yeah. This is how you build a legacy, and this is how you build something truly sustainable, because it's how you breed loyalty. This is how you breed people to care.
Hey, this is Wisconsin. If the Packers can be employee owned, I don't know why we can't have a brewery that's employee owned. And I'm just saying.
And our stock certificates aren't just for show either.
Right.
Well, thank you both for coming in and sharing this time with me. I really appreciate you guys taking your time. Emily, was there anything else you can educate me about health savings accounts? Since last time she was here, I was like, okay, so do I have to open all of the emails they send me from my IRA or whatever? I don't even know what it is. The 401k. She's like, yes, Scott. Yes. Yes, you have to open those emails. So I'm all signed up. I'm good. All right. Now that's why I'm putting on autopilot never think of it again. Thank you, Emily. Thank you, Deb.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott.